was just going to say the good news was you weren't in Lincoln. You may approach.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please court? And I'm sorry, do we need to reserve rebuttal time? Just like a minute would be fine.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah, may it please the court, counsel. I'm here on the appeal of the conviction of Kevin W. Malone, who was convicted of motor vehicle homicide and as well as manslaughter back in June 2017. The basis of our appeal is that we take the position that the court erred in not granting our motion for summary judgment based on the fact that there was no evidence or insufficient evidence of impairment by Mr. Malone at the time of the incident which led to his arrest. The state's witnesses...
He had prescription drugs in his system, didn't he?
He had taken prescription drugs earlier, and there was no evidence of these prescription drugs, although there was opinion that they were depressant in nature. There was no evidence to show that they fit under any of these schedules for narcotics, nor was there any evidence to show that these prescription drugs, in other words, we never had anything to show in the prescription other than the officer's observations that says these prescription medications would lead you to be impaired. There wasn't any showing of any sufficient amount to do that. The officer's testimony was that the prescription drugs combined with the alcohol they thought was in his system, which was shown to not be, or the marijuana that was in his system that was shown later not to have been there, that the combination of those things, but not the prescription, there was really no evidence to show that the presence of prescription drugs themselves or the fact that he had taken them early in the day led to his impairment. The opinion of the fact that he was impaired was really based entirely on the officer's testimony. The state's toxicologist as well as the defense toxicologist both testified that what was shown in the urinalysis doesn't give us any indication of what's in the system at this time. The fact that it had some prescription medication shown in the urinalysis, there could have been nothing. In fact, I believe in both instances, both experts testified he could have very well not had anything in his system because of the way urinalysis works. It shows you what was in the kidneys, but it doesn't show you what's in the bloodstream at any particular time.
So what do we make of his admission that he had consumed alcohol?
He said he had a couple of beers earlier in the day,
right,
and that alcohol would have gone through his system at the time and fully gone through his system and gone out by the time this collision happened. The fact that he had a couple of beers earlier in the day, and there really didn't seem to be any showing of any alcohol in the urinalysis. It was only when they did the urine test, there was no alcohol that showed up. The test was zero. So at the time they did the urinalysis, it was zero. At the time they did any breath test, there was also no alcohol shown in the system at that time. So the very things that the state relies on to convict people of drunk driving, and I do a lot of drunk driving defenses, we rely on that data master. And that data master says there's a certain amount, and you got to take that seriously. In this case, the data master said there was no alcohol in the system. And so the only thing it had is a presence of perhaps some prescription medications that would have been taken sometime within 24 hours prior to the collision.
There were four different prescriptions, is that correct?
Right? Yes. So that was the officers, Officer Van Tyscher and Officer Kelly, both. Now this had to be brought out on cross examination. They both conceded under direct examination that their drug recognition training was not reliable in this case, and therefore the fact that it's not reliable, that also leads to reasonable doubt. And therefore, it was our position that the judge should have granted our motion, saying that the impairment element of the motor vehicle homicide should have been thrown out at that point and gone down to the misdemeanor motor vehicle homicide and let them convict him of that if the jury felt that was appropriate. The other main issue was on the manslaughter. Whether he intentionally and without malice killed the victim while operating the motor vehicle by recklessly driving. It's the difference between we have reckless driving and we have careless driving in Nebraska. This was a case of careless driving. Mr. Malone, in a prior case we cited in our brief, we had somebody driving 80 miles an hour on a motorcycle through a residential. That's a reckless disregard. Blowing through a stop sign, just ignoring it or ignoring a stoplight is certainly reckless. The witness testimony from the state's witness was that Mr. Malone's vehicle was inching out to make the left turn. And he's
against a red arrow.
He is against a red arrow, yes, but he's inching out. He's not just blowing in.
Well, how's that different than blowing a stop sign then?
It's careless. It's more careless driving versus at least he's looking to see if there's something coming on. And he thought there was no oncoming traffic. I'm not saying he's completely innocent there, but it should be considered careless as opposed to reckless. And that would make a difference in the manslaughter. In the manslaughter statute. The fact that the witnesses say he was inching out, it's not like he completely disregarded any oncoming traffic. He's looking, he thought it was clear. He's breaking a law, which wasn't the only law he broke that morning, or that afternoon, but he was definitely breaking the law, but which one is he yelling at is our question.
What about the observations of the witnesses of his behavior following the accident?
Could be explained in a number of different ways. He is shaken up from having just killed somebody when he knows he was driving when he shouldn't have been. Obviously, this was a situation where there's a lot of confusion, a lot of people around. He's trying to figure out what to do. The fact that the behavior would also put down that it's his personality. He's an odd guy. People act differently. And we don't know, not knowing him, we don't know how any of us are going to react to a tragic situation. He turned left and a motorcyclist hit his car with such force that sent the motorcycle driver flying over the roof of his car. That in and of itself would render me pretty speechless. He knows he's in a bad situation here. But people, you don't have to be drunk to do the things that Mr. Malone did that day. There's a lot of sober people will turn against the red arrow. A lot of sober people will, behave in different ways after they've caused something as tragic as this. This could be a reaction to the tragedy, but it doesn't necessarily, because there are other explanations of why he behaved that way, you can't say that's proof of impairment. That is certainly probably showing some guilt on his part. The fact that he knew he was in trouble, it's not an ordinary accident because he knows he's driving illegally. He's driving while he's under suspension. He's driving a car that doesn't have the ignition airlock. And also, he's probably thinking to himself, why did I take this car out to even wash it in the first place? Why didn't I just wash it in my driveway and just start and run it in the second place? Why didn't he do that? So he's probably overwhelmed by a series of bad choices he has made that day, and that could be contributing factor into this all. Doesn't necessarily have to be just because he acted like that, it doesn't show that. It doesn't eliminate other explanations besides being impaired. So he knew he was in a bad way in panic, which would also explain why he left.
And it was my understanding that he did have another vehicle at his home that had the interlock device in it.
It was parked right next to the car he drove.
Do those factors that you just described, that he knew he was driving without a license and without the ignition interlock, those factors, can those be considered when considering reckless driving? Or does that have to be the actual act of driving?
I think you'd want to see the actual act of driving. Okay, those are, if it's a reckless, if it's something that happens while he was driving, these are all decisions made before he left the driveway. And at that point, then it's once he leaves the driveway, he's still, even though he's driving that car illegally, that doesn't mean everything, the mere act of driving the car itself is a reckless. Stupid, but not reckless. Yes. The other issue we was looked at was the actual appeal of the sentence. Yes. The fact that if he is...
You're into your rebuttal time now, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it's stated in the brief. Okay. So those are the two main ones I wanted to hear with you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Vincent.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Melissa Vincent. I'm the Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Malone claims the evidence was insufficient to support two of his four convictions, and the sentence is excessive. because the district court provided a detailed explanation of the sentence, which is clearly supported by the record. I do not intend to address it any further. Instead, I will address the two sufficiency claims. Malone first claims the evidence was insufficient to support his conviction of a motor vehicle homicide because it failed to show that he was under the influence of drugs. This claim is plainly without merit. The record is replete with evidence suggesting that he was under the influence of drugs. In fact, I don't know how the jury could have reached any other conclusion based on the evidence that was presented. And in response to Mr. McGinn's argument, I would note that under Nebraska law, either an officer's observations of the defendant's intoxicated condition or the defendant's poor performance on a on-field sobriety test is sufficient to support a conviction for DUI. In short, I see no problem whatsoever with this conviction, so unless this court has questions about it, I will move on to manslaughter.
Is it correct that the officer's testimony was that it was a combination of the alcohol and the prescription drugs that led to his impairment?
I don't know that it was necessarily the alcohol. What the testimony was that he had several CNSDs, or central nervous system depressants, in his urine sample, which suggested, I think the way I construed the testimony was that the interaction of those four CNSDs alone could have enhanced the impairment, could have enhanced his impairment, the effects of the drugs. The alcohol was a fifth CNSD that could have also been sort of a catalyst for the behavior that we witnessed there. But I don't think it was necessarily contingent on finding that there was alcohol. But, you know, in that vein, I think you have to question why he was driving a car without an ignition interlock permit when he had alcohol earlier that day. I mean, he said that he was going to wash his car. I question whether that is legitimate. But in any event, I think it could be just a combination of the four prescription drugs that were found in his urine. As far as the manslaughter is concerned, the predicate offense for the manslaughter conviction was reckless driving, and Malone's argument on appeal appears to be predicated on two assumptions. One, that he was not under the influence, which again is without merit, and two, that reckless driving necessarily involves erratic driving. I do not agree. Recklessness, for purposes of reckless driving, is defined as a disregard for or indifference to the safety of another or for the consequences of one's acts. So if you have the situation that we have here, where a person is operating a motor vehicle, when he is unable to safely do so because he is impaired, his conduct meets the definition of recklessness. There is no such thing as a cautious or careful intoxicated driver. Driving while under the influence of alcohol or drugs is inherently reckless. And
so are you saying just the fact that he was operating the vehicle while under the influence is enough to show recklessness?
I think on these circumstances, yes. That coupled with the fact that, you know, he's driving and he's not supposed to be, and he's drinking in violation of his court order. He's driving a car that he's not authorized to drive, and then, of course, he's got a red arrow.
If you took away the impairment piece and all you really had was he's driving without a proper license and wasn't driving with the ignition interlock, these other things that suggested he should not be driving, is that reckless by itself?
In and of itself, I doubt it. I think
so it's combined with the impairment issue.
I think the impairment is a big piece of it. Because, you know, of course, that would explain why he's sitting there with a red arrow. And, you know, I think the jury could have reasonably concluded that based on that, he was oblivious to it, or he just didn't care. And he turned out into oncoming traffic. I mean, as I recall the testimony at trial, there was a fair amount of traffic in that area. That's the intersection right by the Open Mall here in Omaha. And it was only about 8 o'clock on a summer evening, and it sounded like, from the testimony of the other witnesses, of which there were plenty, that there was a fair amount of traffic. And so they had the westbound lanes had the green light in that situation. There was quite a bit of traffic, and so how he could have missed that he didn't have the right-of-way in that case is, I don't know how it happened.
It was actually a red light, not a blinking yellow light.
No, it was a firm red arrow, which means you cannot turn under any circumstances. But unless the court has any additional questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you. How much time do we have for rebuttal? 45 seconds.
The only thing I would point out is that counsel for the state is even reiterated the fact the state's entire case of impairment is based on could have. She even used the words in her, it could have, the fact that he had these prescription drugs earlier, and if it was with alcohol, it could have impaired him.
But is that a question of fact for the jury after listening to the various experts?
Well, I think it's at one point it may be considered a fact over jury, but it also raises reasonable doubt. And that's why we thought it should be dismissed at the end of the directed verdict. And also at the end of the case, the judge has another opportunity to direct that out. In fact, once they say could have raised reasonable doubt, and that's what we have here on the issue of merits. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for being here. We will take it up.